Thank you. Welcome. Today is the 6th of March, 2012. And Maduri, you want to tell us about your classes that are coming up? You want to make that announcement now? Maduri is Dr. Maduri Sant, and she is an Ayurvedic doctor, and she has some classes coming up in the near future. Do you want to mention that, or do you want me to do it?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So we have been to many of Maduri's classes. We highly recommend them. Many of us have been there. So she has Ayurvedic cooking, Ruchi Ayurvedic Thali Cafe. Thali means many things on a plate. The date is 10th of March. That's a few days from now. Is it Saturday? Time from 12:30 to 5 p.m. And so that's the first one. And then she has workshops coming up. Introduction to Ayurveda, 24th of March, from 1 to 5 p.m. And then she has Ayurveda in pregnancy and motherhood. That sounds good for all you ladies planning pregnancy.
You never know. She's only out of her job 3 weeks and she's coming.
All things are now possible. Well, see, Ayurveda will help pregnancy come about for people who might be having. We can help people who are having trouble getting pregnant with Ayurveda, no? I don't mean necessarily older people. I mean people in pregnancy age. So Ayurveda in pregnancy and motherhood, that's the 14th of April from 1 to 5 p.m. These are all Saturdays, I think?
Yeah.
And then, oh, here's a good one. Ayurveda and women's health. Now that will be interesting for all of you except for me. But even I would learn something there. And that workshop takes place on the 28th of April from 1 to 5 p.m. And for details, you can ask Dr. Maduri Sant. Anyway, we can pass these around. There's a bunch there. Thank you, Maduri.
Thanks.
And you also brought some masalas that you've made that are available here this evening if we want to get them from you. Okay, pardon? Leslie? Felicity, pleased to meet you. You're very welcome. Thanks for coming. On Thursday is the full moon. The Purnima Falguni, Falgun Purnima, in the month of Falgun. It's in the Vaishnava calendar. Vaishnava means those who worship Vishnu. Vishnu is God. And it's a big day in the Vaishnava calendar because, in the Gaudiya Vaishnava calendar, because it's the appearance day of Sri Chaitanya. And Chaitanya made his appearance about 500 years ago in India, in Bengal, on the full moon night of Falgun. And when God comes down, or an avatar of God comes down, why do they typically come down? Anybody? There's usually two primary reasons.
To spread knowledge.
Yeah, that would be sort of a secondary one, definitely.
Is it because demonic forces are just too big?
Mm-hmm. It's when the forces of darkness, adharma, non-dharma, non-spirituality, against consciousness, against light, against truth. There's not too many of those forces around right now, are there? Then God will come down on occasion. Not very often at all. And the flip side of that is to reduce the dark forces or diminish the dark forces and to... Bring in the light. To inspire the devotees. Because we're humans and we get discouraged, don't we? We get very discouraged at times when we can see no light at the end of the tunnel. So those are the two primary reasons why an avatar will come down to this world. With Chaitanya, it's more complex. This is on the altar here, is in the middle is Radha and Krishna. And Krishna's on the left there, he plays the flute. And Radha is on the right, so Krishna is the male expression of the Godhead or divinity. And Radha is the female expression of divinity. And as I've said many, many times, in Vedic understanding, there's no God without goddess, because that's a state of imbalance. So if there's God, there must be goddess. If there's goddess, there must be God. So that is the perfect state of balance. And so Radha essentially is Krishna's counterpart. Radha and Krishna experience the highest mellow or rasa. Most people think about God in terms of, at the very best, awe and reverence. A relationship with God in terms of awe and reverence, which is called Shanta Rasa. Shanta means sort of neutral. Most people in the Western world think of God more in times of, more in the way of fear and awe, don't they? Aren't we taught to fear God? In America, they always say, "He's a God-fearing man." I was walking down O'Connell Street today. What street was it? Henry Street today. And a guy walked past me in a cowboy hat and he said, "Howdy." And I said, "Howdy."
Howdy back.
Well, God, I come from America. I'm used to that. So, you know, they say, what was I saying there before I interrupted myself?
God-fearing.
God-fearing. They condition us to be God-fearing. But how often do they condition us to be God-loving? Isn't that a better approach? So, there are five rasas, or five relationships one can have with God. And the first one is Shanta Rasa, awe and reverence. Now this we all know. We're all familiar with that because in Christianity we're taught awe and reverence. In Islam we are taught awe and reverence. In Buddhism we are taught there is no God. There's only nirvana. The state of non-existence. In Judaism you're taught awe and reverence. Fear is big too in Judaism. But in Vaishnavism, or the worship of Vishnu, you are taught on reverence. Then the next level up is dasya, becoming a servant of God. So when you don't want to just have a relationship of awe and reverence, you actually want to render some service. Now they do that too in other religions. I mean, when you think of priests and nuns and people like that, they're actively engaged in serving God. At least that's the intention. So that's the next higher level. Can you serve God at home and not be a priest or a nun? Sure. We are endeavoring to do that here. And the next level is sakyam, or sakya rasa, which means friendship. Sakya comes from the root sakha. What does the word sakha mean in Sanskrit, Antoinette?
I don't know.
It means a? If I'm a tree, these are my sakhas.
Branches.
So my friends are my branches. Yeah? It's nice, eh? So sakya is friendship. Right? So you can actually enter into friendship with God. Well, how can you shift from awe and reverence to service to friendship? How does it work? Quality of love. Degree of love. And also natural inclination. When you meet people in the world, some people you are in awe of. Maybe you have a singer that you like. Pop star. I love him. You know. On reverence. And if you meet him, you know, can I get your autograph? That's on reverence. And the next level up, service. Sometimes we serve. Well, if you go to work and you have a boss, what are you doing? Do you not have a service relationship in your job? Well, if you don't have a service attitude in your job, you won't last very long, I can assure you. Yeah, no. Unless you're in civil service and they can't get rid of you, right? You know me, I have to get the digs in. So, service. And some people you meet, you just want to be their friend, or you want them to be your friend, and you enter into friendship sometimes very quickly. And you have friends sometimes that have been your friends a lifetime, right? And that's the relationship you have. And that's higher than these other two. The next level up, you can enter into relationship with God as Vatsalya Rasa, parent. You can actually have God appear as your child. In this life, well, maybe. If you've done a lot of work toward that end in other lifetimes, perhaps. Even in the Christian tradition, you have Joseph and Mary. Or as my mother-in-law would say, Jesus, Mary, and the Holy Carpenter. So, it's the same. Same idea. Same concept. So, if you want to enter into that kind of relationship, it's possible. Then that is kind of a really unusual concept for most Western philosophical or theological thought. But it's possible. And then the highest of them all is a conjugal relationship. So you could become God's wife, for example. So, yes, you can go up to the highest relationship, which is Madhurya Rasa.
Madhurya?
Madhuri, Madhurya. Means what? What does it mean?
Madhurya.
Madhurya.
Madhurya is sweet.
Sweet.
What does Madhuri mean?
Yeah.
Honey.
Madhu,
no?
Honey.
Madhu.
Madhu is honey.
Madhu is honey.
And what does your name mean?
Madhuri. Madhurya. It comes from the word Madhurya.
Sweet.
Sweetie.
So that's the highest rasa or exchange that one can take part in. So Chaitanya appeared to reduce the forces of darkness and encourage the devotees, strengthen the forces of goodness, light, and spiritual understanding. In some of the incarnations, there's actually negative forces in the forms of demons, big demons, in other words, very negative people who are quite powerful. We have demons nowadays too in our world. We have big demons who can kill a lot of people, like Mr. Mugabe. He would be one. What are some other examples? Mr. Hitler. He would have been one. Who else is
George Bush?
George Bush. Okay.
Rockefellers.
Yeah.
Morgan, the big demons.
Yeah. There's many big demons available. But in the incarnation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he did not come in to fight and kill demons, which Ram did when Ram appeared. He killed the big demon Ravan and a few others. When Krishna appeared, that's Krishna there. So Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago. He killed many, many demons. One should understand that when God kills a demon, that soul in the demon's body gets moksha, gets liberation. They are not condemned to hell for eternity or unlimited periods of time. They actually get liberation at the hand of God. It's a little different than what happens between humans, because what God does is called lila, transcendental pastimes. Cannot be compared to humans. Exactly. So Chaitanya didn't kill anybody. That wasn't the incarnation. What he tried to do is destroy ignorance through love. It was an incarnation that was really about love and loving God and professing or spreading love of God, which is something that most people do not do, or most incarnations do not do specifically. But that's what he did. So when Radha and Krishna, the concept is that God manifests himself or expands himself into the female pleasure potency, the Hladini Shakti, the pleasure potency, so he can enjoy and experience what he's like, sort of from an objective point of view. We can only see things from a subjective point of view. So we can't sort of step out of ourselves and see what we would like, or for that matter, not like about ourselves. If we could just watch ourselves walking around and talking and behaving, wouldn't that be interesting? But we can't. Not really. But God can. So he expands himself as Radha to have a loving exchange. And the loving exchange between Radha and Krishna is unlimited. There's no end to it. It keeps expanding and ever expanding. Why? Because in the spiritual realm, there's no limit. There's no law of satiation. In the material realm, everything has a limit. Everything comes to an end. If you go to a great party, you have the time of your life, it ends. If you're out on a wonderful date with somebody you really like, it comes to an end. Everything comes to an end in the material world. In the spiritual world, what are the three symptoms of the spiritual world?
Bliss.
Sat, Chit, Ananda. Bliss is Ananda. Sat, eternity. Chit,
consciousness, understanding.
Full consciousness, full awareness. No bewilderment. Can you imagine? No bewilderment.
You know what that feels like?
You do? That's good. The rest of us don't. It's very hard to find a human being who doesn't get bewildered. Today, a couple times today, once tomorrow, you know, whatever it might be. So, Satchit Ananda. So, Ananda is the pleasure potency, but in the spiritual world, it's all unlimited. It doesn't come to an end. So, Radha and Krishna exchange their rasa, their relationship. So, I'm reading here from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is tells about the appearance of Chaitanya. That's Chaitanya and his main expansion, Nityananda, the two little ones in the front. Chaitanya's in the orange, Nityananda's in the blue. Yeah, right there. Each yuga, what's a yuga?
Period of time.
Period of time. The universe goes through four yugas and they repeat. It's like four universal ages. So the current age is Kali Yuga, or the Iron Age, the age of quarrel, hypocrisy, darkness, lying, cheating, these kinds of things. Lack of understanding, lack of realization, lack of integrity. That's the age we're in right now. And each age, there is a recommended dharma or a spiritual practice, spiritual method that is recommended for the people according to the time and circumstance of that particular age. And so that's one of the reasons Chaitanya came down. So I'm going to read from there. Therefore, I shall personally inaugurate the religion of the age, the Nama Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord. By accepting the role of a devotee, I shall make the whole world dance in ecstasy, and thus realize the four mellows of loving devotional service. When he says four mellows, I just talked about five, because the Shantaras, the first level of neutrality, is not a loving. When you're in awe and reverence, you're not in a loving relationship. You're kind of in a stunned, startled state. So the loving relationship begins with service. And it goes up from there. So that's why he's talking about four. And thus realize the four mellows or rasas of loving devotional service. In this way, I shall teach devotional service to others by personally practicing it as a devotee. For whatever a great personality does, common people will follow. Is that true? Pretty much everywhere, isn't it? of course, my plenary portions can establish the religious principles for each age, but only I can bestow the kind of loving devotional service that is performed by the residents of Vrindavan. Radha and Krishna lived in Vrindavan. So this is where the highest mellow of loving service to God took place 5,000 years ago. Here it says, my plenary portions. What's a plenary portion?
Partial portion.
Avatars are a nice analogy or metaphor for avatars is if you have several candles, there's one candle that's lit, and that's the source. That's the original source, the Adi Purusha, the original person. So the source of all incarnations, the original manifestation of God. Then you take one candle, and from that lit candle, you light the second candle. That's a plenary portion. So they're both equal, or the second candle might be a little less equal, depending what its job is. It could be a smaller candle, for example. But it's the same God energy. But only one of them is the original one. That's how it works. So a plenary portion could be a full manifestation of the Godhead. For example, when Ram was here, Sita and Ram, Ram was here, I think, in Treta Yuga. And Ram is considered to be 50% of Vishnu energy, Vishnu Tattva, and the pure God energy. And the other 50%, he was human. And you would see, if you read the story of Sita and Ram, a lot of times he will lapse into great sadness and sorrow and separation from his beloved. And he sort of has to get himself to snap out of it every now and then. Or, you know, he doesn't so much get bewildered, but he gets overcome, like humans do, or apparently so. So he's the 50%, he's not the 100%. Even Shiva.
I've heard that
before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Shiva, who is
the god of destruction.
Yeah, but what are those three avatars called? I can't think of the name right now. Guna avatars. Because Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. They're guna avatars. So Shiva is in charge of the destruction, wrapping up the universe at the end of its phase. The universe gets wrapped up and goes into a state of dormancy. Just like winter. Everything gets wrapped up and goes into the dormancy. And then in spring it's remanifest again. Universe is the same. So that's Shiva's job to wrap it all up. Shiva is 75% Vishnu Tattva. Higher than Ram. 75.
I'm sorry, Drew, what's the 25%? The remainder, what is he?
Well, what?
That's himself.
Well, it's not. He's not 100% Vishnu Tattva. So, I don't know. I'm not sure what the other 25% is.
What about Krishna?
Krishna's 100%. Krishna is Adi Purusha.
And how much is
Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. So Krishna is the original source.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu
is a embodiment of Radha and Krishna combined. That's what I'm about to read, but I keep interrupting myself. Besides this secondary reason for Lord Krishna to appear once more, taking the form of a devotee, there is another confidential purpose of a very personal nature. Even though Lord Krishna had tasted the essence of loving mellows, a mellow is the loving exchange, in case you're wondering what that word means in this context. Even though Lord Krishna had tasted the essence of loving mellows by performing his conjugal pastimes in the company of the gopis, the cowherd maidens, he was not able to fulfill three desires. Therefore, after his disappearance, the Lord thought, although I am the absolute truth and the reservoir of all rasas, because all rasas exist in the Godhead, any kind of relationship you can enter into down here with another human being exists in its perfect state in the spiritual world. I read this the other day. Here in this world, no matter what kind of relationship you get into with somebody, something's always missing. Something falls short. Oh, he's like this and this and this. Yeah. And is he like that? No, he's not like that. No. You know. So there's, no matter what the situation is, you could have a great job. I love my job. I love my work. I can't stand my boss. Or I can't stand the person who sits in this desk. They make me crazy. There's always something. There's always something missing. It doesn't matter. You know, you could have a beautiful house, but you don't like the neighbor. Or they party half the night. The ones that live right up above you. You know, there's always something. So, when you enter into a relationship with God, nothing's missing. Nothing's missing. That's the difference. Okay. So, Krishna was not able to fulfill three desires. Although I am the absolute truth and the reservoir of all rasas, I cannot understand the strength of Radha's love with which she always overwhelms me. Now, here's God. He's a pretty cool guy. He can impress you kind of at the drop of a hat. And he says, Radha, she just blows me away. She always overwhelms me. She just takes me to increasing levels of ecstasy. Try to imagine this. Hard to do from God's point of view. Indeed, the love of Radha is my teacher. And I am her dancing pupil. For her love makes me dance in various new and wonderful ways. Now, in the spiritual world, all movement is
dance.
And all speech is
poetry.
Song and poetry. You know, in the spiritual world, it's a Broadway musical, a West End musical, or a Bollywood musical. That's why they do that in Bollywood, because that's how it is in the spiritual world. Not quite like that. That's why people, they love musicals. They watch and they go, you know.
All the Bollywood movies, they are like 5 or 6 songs.
Yeah.
And the movie lasts for three hours,
or maybe
3.5 hours.
The other night I saw on telly was coming on The Sound of Music, which is, you know, a great, great film with many nice songs. Kalindi had never seen it. She had never seen it. I said, surely you've seen The Sound of Music. No, what's it about? I said, it's about this nun who can't seem to keep her vows. So we started watching it. She absolutely loved it. Because it's, you know.
What movie is it?
Sound of Music. Julie Andrews is the star. It's old now.
Legal Island of the Steps.
Oh, did you?
Yes,
where she does her.
Where she does the
Doremi of the devil. Oh, very good. Were you singing it while you're doing it?
Oh, we did.
Of course you were.
That was my favorite song.
You see? There you go. This proves the point. So, Krishna becomes the dancing pupil for Radha's love. Whatever pleasure I get from tasting my love for Radha, she relishes 10 million times more. Now please, wrap your mind around that one. Whatever pleasure God gets, she gets 10 million times more. Because her partner's God. What if you had a boyfriend like that? What would that be like? You can't imagine. And he'd be going, say something. You go... Wouldn't that be something? 10 million times more. By her love. Although there is nothing greater than Radha's love, since it is all-pervading. So, I don't know what that means. I guess she sends it out in every direction. It must come at him from every possible angle. It nonetheless expands constantly. That's the thing. This is the point. In the spiritual world, it expands constantly. It doesn't get to a point and then... Here, it's a crescendo. Diminuendo. Right? I'm tired. Okay. You want to go get something to eat? All right. It nonetheless expands constantly and is completely devoid of pride. There is nothing purer than Radha's love, and yet its behavior is inscrutable. Even Krishna can't figure it out. Radha is the highest abode of love, and I am its only object, says Krishna. I taste the bliss to which the object is entitled, but Radha's pleasure is 10 million times greater than mine. Therefore, my mind becomes mad to taste the pleasure that is experienced by the abode of love, although I cannot do so, because she's experiencing it all. Only if I can somehow become that abode of love will I be able to experience its joy. Chaitanya, Radha and Krishna in the same body. Wait till I tell you what that causes. Absolute mayhem. This was one desire that increasingly blazed in Krishna's heart. Then upon seeing his own beauty, he began to consider as follows. Try to get this from the right angle. My sweetness is unlimitedly wonderful. It's God, after all. Only Radha can taste the complete nectar of my sweetness by the strength of her love, which acts just like a mirror whose clarity increases at every moment. The more her clarity increases, the deeper she enters into the experience. Although my sweetness, being without limit, seemingly has no room for expansion, it shines forth with newer and newer beauty. It's unlimited. So, what really is this saying? They blow each other's minds. When? Constantly. Back and forth. Back and forth. The exchange. And thus, constantly competes with the mirror of Radha's love, as they both go on increasing and never admitting defeat. So, that's why he took birth as Chaitanya. From his perspective, not so much from our perspective. So, full moon night, month of Falgun. Jagannath Mishra had a dream one night, and in the dream he saw God enter his body. Jagannath Mishra is a Brahmin in Bengal, a pundit. The Brahmin is he belongs to the priestly class or the intellectual class, the educated class. You know, a Brahmin would be a teacher, a priest, a writer, a doctor, a counselor, educated, and be a Brahmin. By quality. And Jagannath Mishra, who's a very pure soul, and he had a dream and saw God enter his body. And in the dream he saw God, like a bright light, go from his body and into the body of his wife, Shachi. Shachi Mata. Mata means mother. And that's what he saw. So Shachi became pregnant. And month 9 rolled around. She would have benefited from your class, Ayurveda and Women's Health and Pregnancy. And month 9 rolled around. Baby was at term. Mother was at term. Month 10 came and went. Month 11 came and went. Month 12 came and went. Month 13 was, they didn't mention the size of her belly, so I'm not sure.
I don't mean her,
yeah. Length of time.
And length of time, yeah, right. Length. Elephants stay in for how long?
24 or 18.
Months. Oh, yeah, very good. Month 13 came, and then he started to get worried, and he sent for his father-in-law. His father-in-law was Nilambar Chakravarti, very, very powerful pundit. What's a pundit?
Priest.
Scholar. Wise man. Very, very knowledgeable. So he was also a Jyotishi. He could do into the astrology. So they sent for the father-in-law. Oh my God, what is happening? This child. And he did some calculations astrologically, and he says, he said, I have already made these calculations and written them down. You have within your womb God. Truth be told. And he is waiting for an auspicious time to come. He will not come unless the most auspicious time has arrived. Because we know when you come out of the womb, astrologically, wherever the stars are in the sky, that will show the map of your karma throughout your lifetime, will show what's going to happen in this lifetime, who you were in past lives, and where you're going, pretty much. And so he had already made a calculation, said, well, I have to tell you, God is here in your womb. And Jagannath Mishra says, well, this was the dream I had. So there you go. So he waited for an auspicious time. Well, it was an eclipse of the full moon in the month. An eclipse is inauspicious. Why? Because calamities happen, but why is it inauspicious?
Because the darkness.
Because the light is eclipsed by darkness. And so the moon was eclipsed, well, between sun, between Earth and the moon was Rahu, but Ketu was in conjunction with the moon. Rahu and Ketu are the two shadows. North node, south node. So it was a full moon eclipse. And the moon was in Singha, Leo. Now in India, at least back then, I'm not sure if they still do it. They probably do. When there's an eclipse, people go into the river up to the waist and they chant. They chant mantras, they chant the names of God to offset or to protect themselves from the negative energy of the eclipse. Well, surely Chaitanya would know that. And the purpose of his incarnation was to propagate the chanting of the holy names of God. That was his purpose. So how to get everybody chanting when he comes out of the womb? Kind of a no-brainer. Quite clever, really. So that's what he did. So all of the Hindus or Vaishnavas and those people were all in the rivers, in the Ganga, chanting the holy names. And there, in that area, in Navadweep at the time, a very large Muslim population. The governor, the Nawab Hussein Shah, was the governor of Bengal at the time. And he was Muslim. So when the Muslims, the people, saw all of the Hindus in the water and the Vaishnavas in the water chanting, they all started chanting, making fun of them. Oh, Hare Krishna, oh, Hare Krishna. So they were all chanting too. They weren't chanting politely, but everybody was chanting. Here's the thing. Mark and Dale, we're losing you, buddy. You're floating away. So, everybody was chanting. And that's when he appeared. Now, as his pastimes developed, much later on, he became a very, very important scholar. He was sort of masking his purpose in his younger years, in his school years. He was just studying. Whatever he read and studied, he read it once. Mastered everything. Any language, any book, any subject, he would read it once, he would master it, and he could defeat anybody in terms of philosophical argument. Nobody could beat him. He could even defeat his teacher. So, he was outstanding. And he was exceptionally beautiful. I mean, extremely beautiful. You couldn't take your eyes off him. He had a golden complexion. He had the complexion of Radha. Radha has a golden complexion. And Krishna has a complexion like a monsoon cloud. Dark blue. So he had the complexion of Radha. And his hands reached down to his knees. He was 7 feet tall. Somewhere around 7 feet tall. Yeah. And just absolutely beautiful. Compellingly beautiful. So when you saw him, you couldn't stop staring at him. I can't help it. Like that. Yeah. You know, some people do that. Sometimes you have seen people, well, I think we all have, and you see somebody and you look at their beauty and their beauty stuns you. Have you ever had that experience? Now, it could be male, it could be female. I mean, you just go, and you're like, there it is. Confirmed again. That must be you. That's one of your 14 phones. He's not even in the phone business anymore. So, he only came into his devotional persona or identity somewhat later on, after he met his guru. He didn't do that. He masqueraded as a scholar for quite some time before he actually became devotional. When he was a little child, he would cry, like children do, but like when he was a baby. And the only thing that would make him stop crying is if he'd begin to chant the names of God and the ladies, because the neighborhood ladies would all be over, oh, can I hold him? They'd all want to hold him. And when they held him on their lap, they went into a state of bliss. So when he'd start to cry, he would not stop crying until they began to chant and clap and dance around a little bit for his entertainment. And then he would stop crying. So he got everybody chanting again. That was the whole idea. It's the point of the incarnation. Then in India, even nowadays, in most homes, they have a courtyard. You go in the front gate or the front door, whatever it may be, and there's a courtyard. And then the home, it goes around the courtyard. It might go up one story, two stories, three stories, four stories, depending. But that central courtyard, the Brahmastan, is always there. In most homes. I mean, people will have means, for sure. It would still be built like that, I think. So the courtyard is, a lot of things are done in the courtyard, and it's a private courtyard. Yeah, you know, they prepare food sometimes in the courtyard, and all kinds of different things go on there. You know, and you're outdoors, but you're private. So we would have a backyard or a front yard. They would have a courtyard. So, and the courtyard, his family was not wealthy. Chaitanya's father was not wealthy. And in fact, he was a poor Brahmin. So the baby would be sleeping, they'd get up in the morning, and the baby's not walking yet. And they look, the parents, and they would have these footprints all over the courtyard in the dust, in the dirt. And they had on the footprints the symbols of Vishnu. And Jagannath Mishra, the father, was astounded. He said, where did these footprints come from? It's not our child, because he can't walk. He's a baby. And then Jagannath Mishra says, well, we have the deity in our temple room. Pardon me. So the deity must have gotten off the altar and walked around. And Vishnu is putting his footprints in the dust. And they called over Nilambar Chakravarti, the father-in-law. Oh my God, what's happened now? His footprints. God must be walking around the place because Chaitanya's here. And Nilambar Chakravarti looked at the footprints. Yes, Shankh, Chakra, Gada, Padma. These are the symbols on the foot. You know, as we have on our palms and our feet, we have lines and markings. We might have a triangle. We might have a square. We might have different markings, don't we? You know that. That's what palmistry reads. On your feet, you would have some markings too. So when it's God, his are a little more elaborate. You have the flag. You have an acorn. you have the
conch,
fish,
goat,
the elephant goad, the chakra, the lotus flower, shankha chakra gada, the club, padma. What else do you have? Palace. Here's a symbol of a palace. And trying to remember.
The tortoise.
And the fish. I think she said the fish. There's a bunch more. So, hard to mistake that one. And Nilambar Chakrabarty came over. He says, "Oh, well, I think I know where those came from." And he goes over to Chaitanya and he looks at the feet. Sure enough, all the markings are on the feet and on the hands. So they're going, "Oh, well, he doesn't walk yet." Well, he was walking around when they weren't looking. So that's what happened there. When he became older, he more or less, once he met his guru Ishwara Puri, he became devotional. His heart opened, if you will, or his incarnation, the purpose of his incarnation became manifest. And that's when he began to manifest symptoms. They would have kirtans, or they would be chanting. They would be doing a lot of chanting in the evenings at different people's homes. And he would go into ecstasy. And ecstasy would be, goosebumps and shivering, hair standing on end, and hot flushes, horripilation, and various other symptoms. Sometimes he'd pass out. Well, which is interesting. What is interesting is he has Moon and Ketu together in his birth chart, which is a yoga for epilepsy. So he manifested on the physical plane symptoms of epilepsy. He'd have a fit and he'd fall on the ground and he'd go into a, what do you call it? Spasm or what was the other? Seizure? What appeared to be a seizure. But it was out of love for God, so he was experiencing what Radha was experiencing, what she experiences when she's with Krishna. So he was experiencing. I mean, it was also on another level. It's like bipolar, because he's got two persons in the one. You know, is that what you call bipolar? I think so. Yeah.
Bipolar depression.
Yeah, but I mean, when you have more than one personality.
Schizophrenia.
Yeah, well, I mean, in a sense, he's got two personalities, but it's not schizophrenia.
No.
But it's transcendental schizophrenia. But it actually, you know, it caused his body, sometimes it caused the joints to separate with nothing but skin holding them together. And then they'd wake him up, they'd tap him, they'd chant, because the only thing would bring him around because he was gone. They chant, finally he'd come back to consciousness and his body would go back to normal like this. So it was an interesting incarnation. He would walk through Jharkhand forest and all the animals would approach him and they'd follow him and the animals would start chanting. The tigers were chanting, the elephants were chanting, the deer, the cows, everybody was chanting the holy names. And wherever he would go, he would have this effect. And there'd be thousands, sometimes millions of people around. And it's not hard for you to imagine that in India there would be millions of people around. So, in this way, everybody was chanting the holy names, which is the Yuga Dharma. And that can deliver you from samsara, repeated birth and death. And, most importantly, develop your love for God. You can enter into a loving relationship. So Chaitanya was there to show how one can enter into a loving relationship very easily, very simply in this age. It's not so difficult, not so complex. Just chanting. Any comments? Questions? Revelations?
He was quite young when he departed, but how did he was 48, wasn't he?
Yeah. How did he die? No, I can't.
Well, he actually went to sea and then disappeared.
Was that it? He went into the sea?
Yeah.
That's right, he went into the sea. He went into the sea and he never came out again. But he had gone into the sea once before and was missing for about 3 days, and a fisherman pulled him out in his net. He had gone into a state of ecstasy. Well, when you just think, when you lose consciousness of this world, then you don't know where you are. He's in his highest ecstasy, and they had to, toward the end of his life, they had to keep bringing him back, so to speak. Come on back, come on back. You're here. Oh, yeah, right. Okay. Oh, too bad. He would get very disappointed, because he was in the spiritual world, in his meditation, experiencing everything that Radha and Krishna were experiencing, and they kept going, come on back down. He's going, stop. So they pulled him out of the net, and he was all disjointed and hanging loose. And the poor fisherman, said, it was nighttime. He's running on the beach, he's going, oh, like this, the fisherman. And they said, his Chaitanya's closest associate, Swarup Damodar, he said, I think this man knows something. He goes up to him, he says, Excuse me, what is your problem? He says, there's a ghost, he's haunting me, he's chasing me. And he says, where is this ghost? He says, I caught him in my net. How do you know he's a ghost? He's a ghost, he's all deformed. And he's speaking, Swarup Damodar says,
that sounds just like my buddy.
Yeah, and the fisherman says, I have to go find a somebody who's a ghostbuster, who knows a mantra to overcome the ghost. Well, he isn't a ghostbuster, but whatever the term is. And Swarup Damodar says, stop. I will give you the mantra for the ghost, and you will be safe. So he started chanting a mantra, and he chanted Nrsinga mantra to Nrsingadev, and snapped the guy out of it. He said, now where did you find this monster of yours? Oh, come, I'll show you where he is. So here's Chaitanya, he's in the net, lying on the beach. And they don't know if he's alive because he's got no pulse. But that's not the first time he had no pulse.
It must have been hard for him to live in this reality.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you don't want... the only reason he's here, really, is to help us. So, otherwise, he wouldn't have to be here. He could just be in the spiritual world. And, anyway, they brought him around. But all he wanted to hear were about... They would chant verses and sing songs. One thing that has become clear to me is that all the people that are around Krishna in his Leela, in his pastimes, Radha and Krishna, and everybody that was around Chaitanya when he was here 500 years ago were all absolutely amazing singers and dancers and musicians and artists and purveyors of beauty. In Krishna Lila, all the gopis knew the 64 arts.
One of them is splashing water.
Correct. And they all knew the 64 arts, like composing poetry. Compose, give me four lines of poetry right now. On any subject.
She's leaving, she said.
Four lines of poetry.
No, original.
Oh, original.
No, you got me. You have to make a poem right now, on the spot. Not a poem you read at school. Not a famous Irish poet, no. Go ahead. Anybody? Four lines of poetry.
Here I am, I claim this space. I am solid, steadfast.
Yay!
Oh, where's the meter?
Oh,
that's the meter.
That's in there somewhere.
Where's the rhyme?
Poetry doesn't have to rhyme.
No, in not in Kali Yuga. But it does here. Rhyme and meter.
We should have 64 nights.
Yeah, we should have a poetry sound off.
Gopi
party.
Well,
let's organize it. Let's organize it. We'll organize a gopi party. Absolutely. Who's giving us four lines of poetry?
Poetry. Mom writes poetry.
Not off the top of my head.
Miriam? Come on, let go of those inhibitions now.
£50 million.
For £250,000. Anyway, so he would get them to recite mostly shlokas, verses from different scriptures describing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Which of course would go further into ecstasy, but they wouldn't just recite it, they'd sing it. With beautiful, beautiful voice. The Bengalis sing very sweetly. I mean, very sweetly. Amazing. They're very gifted in the arts. They're known to be. And I know this from being there. So anytime you hear anybody that sings like an angel, and it doesn't matter what they're singing, you're like, ah, oh, that's how it affects you. So these are the kinds of people that were there. And it's the same thing, you know, when Krishna's doing his Leela. You're hearing the best of the best of the best, live and in person. In fact, so live, they never die. Even better. Okay, so.
Drew, could I ask a question?
Sure.
Is there another avatar on the cards?
There is.
Kalki
avatar.
But when's that person, he or she, coming?
About 427,000 years from now.
Away? Away, like 4,000 years away.
From now, away from now.
Yeah,
set your watches.
You don't want to be here on the end.
But I was wondering, can I ask a question?
Well, of course.
Right, I was wondering, I only realized today that not everybody wants to leave Earth. Because I was trying to convince a friend of mine at lunchtime, and I was like saying, I was saying about the Earth, and they were going, I really like being on Earth. And I was like, so maybe not all of us can do the samsara thing because maybe there's people who are meant to keep coming back.
Of course. Because we come here to work through our karma and to fulfill our desires. Mm. In the spiritual world, everything is God-centered. It's God-centric. So God is everything's done for the pleasure and satisfaction of God. And then you wake up one day and you say, well, wait a second here. You know, why am I serving God? Why is he getting everything done for him? I don't really want to sign on for that anymore. Oh yeah, okay, no problem. But you can't stay here. We have a place for you. It's called the material world. You can go down there and you can make yourself the center of the universe. That's called egocentric. And you work away. Knock yourself out.
Because they don't know what could be the... You know, somebody eating the same food, he doesn't know that... Or she or he doesn't know what kind of... It could be... There's a bad one there as well. Like, yeah, but...
The, something
what even tastier, isn't it? Yeah, it could be like... What is this? A finger, right? Now, there's two fingers. But now, there's one is short, one is bigger. But it's the one there that that's what you're looking at, and that's the one here you're experiencing, because you don't know there's something there as well, better than that. So maybe at the end of the day, there's no awareness.
Yeah, and they are in a state of... First of all, anybody in the material world is in Maya, under the spell of certain kinds of illusion. Number one is you think you're the body. That's the number one illusion. So your friend may be happy, satisfied, not unhappy, not miserable, maybe enjoying a good life. It's possible. But even if she has a wonderful life in any category, maybe every category, it comes to an end. Death comes. She loses everything she loves.
Youthness.
You lose your youth. Begin to suffer. You get old. You get decrepit. It's not so nice.
Yeah, because as life's gonna go on, you see the people around you. Like, you know, like now I go to India. I have a couple of aunties. They are gone now. Uncle and then I say that. And then you go there now. Now it's about 3 weeks. So I was in London. And next thing I heard, like my mom left a message. On my phone, I missed the call and she was crying and she said, one of my aunties is gone. And I said, my God. And then you think about your auntie, my God, it's just like, you're in a state of shock. You say, oh my God. So now you're going to go to India, you're not going to find her. But I still can't believe that she's dead, you know. But then you say that, okay, you know, now more and more people are going to leave you. And then at the end, you're going to get... older and older, and you get diseases and this and that, and then do you say that, oh my God, I really want to leave from here.
Yeah.
But because your friends, they are young and they're enjoying the life, and everything is fine, full of energy and this, everything's possible. What happens whenever you want to do the thing, but you don't have energy and you're sick in the bed? What kind of life is that?
I mean, she's not ready to, you have to be ready to want to pursue spiritual life. We talked the other day, there are four kinds of people that approach God. Chaturvida bhajante imam, jana sukriti narjuna, arto jigyasur artarti gyanicha bharatarshaba. So four kinds of people approach God. And they are the distressed, those who want desires fulfilled, or they want wealth, or they want economic benefit in some way. They want something. Third one is the curious. Those who are curious. The fourth one is those who are in knowledge. Which are you?
I'm in distress.
She's in distress.
Knowledge.
Huh?
Knowledge.
Knowledge is you? You are?
Mixture.
Neve?
All of them.
All of them?
A bit of less of the knowledge.
less of the knowledge?
I go and see each one on different days.
Okay. Miriam?
A mixture, really, too.
Mixture.
I don't feel stressed.
Maduri?
Too.
You any of those?
I go through all of those. Probably a lot of them. But knowledge, I think, is a big one.
Good. Knowledge is the best one. Antoinette?
Likewise. The very same as well.
Yeah. So, I said this the other day when I gave this lecture in the city center. I don't know how many people there, maybe 50 people. I says, which one? No one would own any of it. The one and only one man put it up his hand, knowledge. So, it doesn't matter what the reasons are, but unless you're in one of those categories, you won't be. Why would you approach God? Everything's going fine. Especially if your life is going well and you're happy and.
Because the only thing is that person there, not like, because they gave you a bit of distress, like, so I was sort of.
Well, if they get into a lot of distress and they love it here, it shows you how deep the illusion is.
Okay.
It means the illusion has that much greater a grip on them.
Yeah. Well, I suppose what I learned was that maybe I just need to respect maybe where people are, and because I do have a habit of trying to. it should have just showed me there are some people who want to be on earth and are quite well happy to keep them back, and I've got to just sort of,
yeah,
it's not my job to.
Bhunam janmanamante gyanavam prapadyate vasudeva sarvam iti sa mahatma sudurlaba. Out of many, many thousands of people, one will endeavor for perfection. Out of many who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. That's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita.
The hard part is to keep your focus for any length of time.
Yeah, on anything.
You can focus on it for, like, you know.
Yep.
Short amount of time, and then it's like, okay, let's go make tea. It's like.
That's what the mind is, and say that mind is like it's a man, yeah? Isn't it? Yeah, like man is it, and this is a chanchal.
Chanchala hi mana Krishna,
yeah.
Pramati balavazdredam.
It doesn't matter if you go to meditation, doesn't matter if you're aware that, oh my God, I'm not going to focus on meditation, you're still somewhere else, oh my God. Then you realize that you try to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's always wonder.
Yeah.
Can we say that, like, say, Radha and Krishna, you say that, like, they are yin and yang? You can say that.
Yeah.
You can say, this is, like, even our body, we have, like, if we man, then testosterone goes higher, and then estrogen, but estrogen is still there anyway.
They have
estrogen, but they still have testosterone. And then whatever part is more, and they are like,
right.
And then maybe I don't
the female,
know.
The female has the feminine on the outside, effectively, and the masculine on the inside. According to Chinese medicine, it should be 80-20. As we know, it's not always 80-20. But that's what it is. So we have the inner feminine as men, the women have the inner masculine. And when you're a woman and you have the outer masculine, and when you're a man and you have the outer feminine, then we're more into the Klieblinga. It's three genders. masculine, feminine, neuter. The gay gender, if you will, is recognized in the Vedas as a third gender. It's actually a gender. It's not, oh, this is all wrong. It's against nature. No, it's the third gender. Now, it is also said that it's more difficult for a person in that state of mind to... practice spirituality.
But that's what the gay people are, very, very much into the artistic people they are.
Very artistic, yeah.
But that's what Gandharva.
Well, you know, there was, if you think about it, during the Renaissance, there was an explosion of gayness, gay and lesbian people during the Renaissance. And there was an explosion of art and beauty and culture at the same time.
Michelangelo was gay,
wasn't
he?
Who? Michelangelo. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was gay. Socrates. Don't forget Maduri's classes. We recommend them. So Thursday is Chaitanya's appearance day. Fasting till moonrise. Moonrise is 7 o'clock.
It's okay, I'll get up at 5.
And eat then? She's going to get up before the sun comes up, because the beginning of the day is actually when the sun comes up. Days do not begin at midnight. They begin at sunrise. Okay. So thank you for your attendance. We invite you to tea and bickies.
Penguins?
tea and penguins.
Culture about penguins.
We will not be here next month for Tuesday, the first Tuesday. So what we're going to do is we're going to have it on the 17th of April. April 17th should be a Tuesday, because we will not be back from India till after that. So we don't. We, rather than cancel it for the whole month, we'll hopefully we'll be coming back somewhat enlivened from our transcendental adventure. Okay. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna.